During the time of the Roman Empire, one of the great deterrents was perfected by the Romans. It was the execution of crucifixion. Crucifixion was not just a way to remove someone from society in their time. It was a message to society. It was something that was gruesome and intimidating and publicly painful and shameful. Crucifixion was perfected by the Romans. It was first started by the Persians, but the Romans got it just right, where a man could last for more than a day, sometimes 2 or 3 days, on a cross, gasping for breath, slowly suffocating, and in great pain until he would die. Now, about a century before these things that we just read about in the Gospel of Mark, there was a slave rebellion in the Roman Empire. And one of the leaders was a man named Spartacus. You might have heard of him. Spartacus was a man that was taken as a slave, but he was so big and he was such a good fighter that they made him a gladiator. And they had these things called gladiator schools, where the men kept in chains normally would be trained to fight in the gladiator games. Spartacus and a group of other men on one occasion made a plan, and they used kitchen utensils to rise up and fight their way to an armory. And it worked. These Roman slaves, who were also gladiators, escaped. Now, Rome couldn't have this. Rome couldn't have a group of slaves out on the run. But over the next 2 years, their numbers swelled to tens of thousands of slaves that they had joined to their ranks, fighting and defeating several Roman armies. After about 2 years, Rome employed the wealthiest man in the city of Rome to oversee the defeat of Spartacus and all of these rebels. What happened was they found them and they defeated them in a little place that's just south of the city that you would know today as Naples in Italy. And after the defeat, there were about 6,000 men who were left in this group with Spartacus that remained. What they did then was they took these 6,000 survivors and they crucified them. And it was on a road that you can still walk today, this Roman road called the Appian Way. And for a little over 200 miles, that would be like going from where we are here at church down to Richmond, Virginia, they crucified 6,000 men. Now, on average, that would be one averaging every 50 meters. And imagine the sight. The point was this: don't mess with Rome. Don't rebel against Rome. And this heavily traveled road was sending a signal for Rome to say, you need to be in line with the way we say things ought to be. If you get out of line, this will happen to you. That was crucifixion. Everyone knew at that time the horror of crucifixion. The men who followed Spartacus did so knowing that was what they were risking. They followed him trying to find freedom from their slavery at the risk of crucifixion. That was what it meant to flee slavery for them, and without escaping the boundaries of the Roman Empire, they were caught, and that is what they paid. A Roman cross meant all of those things. The point of the Roman cross was this: Rome telling people, you don't want to end up here. This is something that you don't want. Therefore, stay in line. If you can be in line with what we say ought to be, you can enjoy all that you can get in Rome. But if you get out of line, the cross. It was an incredible deterrent. Well, that is why what Jesus says in this passage is so incredibly shocking. Jesus had just said that he would suffer and die to his disciples, that he would be raised after that. Now, in verse 34, he makes this great statement. This is the main statement. This is a simple passage, This main statement is in verse 34. And then the next four verses, they begin all with the word "for," are reasons to support this statement, explaining it and making it more clear, giving the reasons for this statement that we see in verse 34. Now, let's begin by looking at verse 34, and then we'll go through those four reasons. This is what he says. And calling the crowd to him with his disciples, he said to them, "If anyone would come after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross, and follow me." To follow Jesus, Jesus says to his disciples and the crowd that was there, calling all these people to respond to him, "If you want to follow me, this is how it works." Same message to us today. You have to embrace your cross and follow Christ. So we should ask a few questions, make sure we understand this clearly. What does it mean to deny yourself? And we should ask this: what does it mean to take up your cross and follow him? Well, to follow him, it means to obey him, that he's the one that's in charge. What he says is what you do. Where he goes, that's where you go. You take your directions from him. What does it mean to live for yourself, or then in contrast, to deny yourself? Well, living for yourself means putting your interests first. It means saying, "I am going to invest my time, my energy, my resources in what I want, in what helps me and the people I love. You know, we four and no more." It's not necessarily yourself. It might be you're living for your child. You're living for your spouse. But your priority is what interests you. That's the way to live for self. When I was a boy, we would go down to Maryland and we would go crabbing. And what we would do was we would buy some chicken, some raw chicken at the store, and we would put it on these lines. And then we would lower it off of a dock. And then when we got a bite, the crabs were holding onto it. Pull it up, get them in the net. We caught a bunch of crabs. And then afterwards, we'd go back to our campsite and we would put all these crabs in a big pot. Season them with Old Bay and cook them and eat them. When you put all the crabs in a pot, something happens. No crab wants to be in the pot. And the crabs all start hurting each other and trying to climb over each other. And they don't care about the other crabs. They have sort of an illustration for us of what it means to have a life that is lived for self, stepping over others, hurting others, climbing over others to save yourself. Or you might think about that classic example from Cinderella, the wicked stepmother. She was interested in her daughters, and she was doing what was wrong towards Cinderella. And whenever we hear the story or watch the story, we can all know she is living for self, and we can see that is clearly wrong. But people will tell you to live for self. People will tell you, put yourself first. Self-care is your priority. You have to look out for number one. That's the message of this world. Get all you can. Live for yourself. And the problem is that we tend to love self more than we love others, more than we love God. But what God expects of us, God who made us in his image, is for us to love him and to love others, and not simply to live for ourselves. So it's a deadly trap. It's what C.S. Lewis calls the hell of self. He says, Jesus says, you must deny that. You must deny self to be Christ's disciple and saved. Well, the other question then, what does it mean to take up your cross? What does it mean to take up your cross? Notice he doesn't say the cross or a cross. He says, take up your cross. This is choosing to put self-interest aside for the sake of Jesus and the gospel. Jesus willingly took up his cross. He went to the cross because it was God's purpose for him. And his purpose in the cross is different than what he calls us to. But there is some similarity to it. We, in taking up our cross, reflect something that he did. He turned away from the things of this world. He did it as redemption. We do it as allegiance with him. We do it as people that are called to follow him. We're not redeeming others. We're not redeeming ourselves as he did. Taking up your cross is suffering any loss or any pain in order to obey Jesus with your life. Now, in the second century, there was a leader of a church in Smyrna called Polycarp. Polycarp was a bishop. Okay, he was a pastor and he had a house with servants. And Rome at that time didn't like to have people that weren't giving allegiance to Caesar in worship, to say that Caesar is Lord. And the Christians at that time were called atheists. Well, Polycarp was preaching against this and teaching people that you should worship Jesus. So they sent some soldiers on horseback to his house in Smyrna to arrest Polycarp. Now, at this time, Polycarp was 86 years old. When they showed up at his house, they were surprised because he could have fled. The people there loved him in Smyrna. They could have gotten him out of there. He said to the people that were in his town, "No, no, no. If this is God's will, I'll go." And then the soldiers were welcomed at the front door, not resisted. And he said, "Come in, come in." And he said, "Let's give them dinner. They've traveled a while." He fed them and gave them drink. And he said, "Could I have 1 hour to pray before we go?" And they said, "Why are we here?" They said, "Why are we at this guy's house?" And so he prayed and he went with them willingly. Now, they brought him to a Colosseum. And there, a proconsul, a government official for Rome, was calling him to publicly renounce Christ. And he said, "Renounce Christ. Say publicly, 'Down with the atheists.'" The Romans were referring to the Christians because they wouldn't worship the Roman gods or Caesar. "Down with the atheist, and we will let you go free." And Polycarp said, he pointed to the Romans in their seats and he said, "Down with the atheists." And the proconsul said, "Listen, I will bring in wild beasts and they will eat you." And he said, "I can't do that." And then the proconsul said, "Listen, if you're not afraid of wild beasts, I will set you on fire." And he said, he had an incredible response. He said, "Listen, I have served Christ for 86 years and he has never done me wrong. I cannot deny him now." And then he said, "You threaten me with a fire that lasts for maybe an hour. Outside of Christ are the dangers of the fires of hell, which last forever. I will not deny Christ." And so they executed Polycarp. You can read more. There are many more details in Fox's Book of Martyrs or other places. If you belong to Christ, the top priority for you is not concern for self. It is in living for Christ, no matter what that means. Now, just before Jesus said these words, Peter rebuked Jesus for talking about the cross. Remember that? He said, just taking him aside, sort of whispering to him, "Jesus, you can't do this. That's not the way I think it should be." And Jesus said, remember what he said to him? "Get behind me, Satan." That's right. "Get behind me, Satan." Now, we need to make this point about understanding the cross. It was Satan who wanted to remove the suffering and the cross from Christ. And trying for us to have a Christianity without a cross is satanic. It is a deception. People do this in many ways. It all comes down to this: saying you're a Christian, but then living for self as your very top priority, getting all you can over a cross, avoiding a cross. This call from Jesus also is for anyone who would come after him. He called the crowd and the disciples together, and he says, "Listen, it's an open call. Whoever will deny themselves, take up a cross and follow me." That's how you're Jesus' disciple. That is the way to repent and believe in Jesus, to have life. So this is the call. This is the main thing that he's saying here. And then he gives four reasons. You see the next four verses? They all start with the word "for." The first reason he gives is in verse 35. "For whoever would save his life will lose it. But Whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. Now, you have to notice in this verse the way he's talking about something that will happen in the future. Jesus is leading people to focus on what will be. It isn't yet. There will be a day of judgment and of change. That day will come. Now, for Christians, in the time that Mark was first writing this, there was suffering. There was an emperor called Nero. Now, early church records say that Mark wrote this as the interpreter for Peter. Peter would die under Nero and other leaders, including Paul. Nero would do awful things to Christians. And it wasn't just a deterrent. It was kind of this sick entertainment that he got from it. He would do awful things. You can read about them. I'm not going to go into detail. It's too gruesome. But the things that he would do for two Christians were known. They were well known. And for people to read this in Mark's gospel, that Jesus said these words would have been an incredible encouragement, because it is good news for anyone who suffers as a Christian, because there is hope that is ahead. Whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. Friends, in our culture, in our time right now, we can look at America and the history of America, and we can thank God that we have enjoyed incredible freedom and acceptance generally as Christians. I'm not saying always. I'm just saying generally, by comparison, historically in this world, we have enjoyed incredible freedom. It might not be that way forever. In fact, I think that the rising secularism in our culture is more and more opposed to Christianity. And we always think about it like, if we preach Christ, if we hold to the truth, what will happen is that this guy, the guy in the pulpit, is going to get arrested and go to jail. Well, we had a good favor done to us by John MacArthur in recent weeks. They had like 24 requirements that restricted them from worship, and they decided to disobey, and they worshiped anyway, and they said why. Well, the county there didn't come and arrest John MacArthur. They didn't come and put police officers at the door of the church. They didn't do any of that. What they did was they started fining the church $1,000 a day. Now imagine if someone did that to Windsor. Ask our financial committee. How well would that go over for us? You see, the persecution that comes is not foolish. You know, they weren't going to make a martyr out of John MacArthur, but they were trying to cripple them financially. And when people looked on that, it was only other Christians that cared for the sake of that church, Grace Community Church in Los Angeles. We will face opposition, I believe, and it won't be the kind that we expect. This kind of opposition that comes is something that will be subtle. It'll be something that Satan suits for this time in this culture. Now, I want to just point this out in this verse. You see the word but, okay? Whoever would save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel will save it. You can't have it both ways. This is not a both and proposition. This is an either or proposition. Either you live for this life and self, or you take up a cross and follow me. There are two very different realities. Now, going on to the second point that he makes, the second reason for this, verse 36. For, he says, what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul? It's a question. He's posing a question here. Okay. What does it mean by gain? Gain is all that you can make of this world, all that you can get out of this life, all the luxury, all the pleasures, all the entertainment, all the glory, all the things of this world, all of those things that are gain. Is gain wrong? Is it wrong to have beyond a certain number in your bank account? No, it is not. And that's not the point that he's making here. It is not wrong in itself. And that's not what he's saying. This is a comparison between living for gain to gain all that you can for yourself, to get everything you can out of this world, or letting go of gain if it hinders you from following Christ. Again, all of these things fall in one or two sides. I was talking with Gordon earlier. There was a saying in the, I think it was the Pennsylvania Lottery. They used to say this when I was a child: you can't win if you don't play. You know, and there's this temptation to just get all you can in this world. You have to participate in the patterns of this world if you're going to gain. And if you will live for gain, he says, a question: what will it profit you? And he goes to the extreme. Jesus says, what if you're successful in gain? Jesus says, now think about it. What would it profit you if you could gain the whole world? There are some wealthy people living right now, people that are wealthier than probably anyone in history. Would you choose gain over obeying Christ? Think about this. The richest person in the world right now, everyone knows who this is, Jeff Bezos, right? And there are the seven of the 10 wealthiest people live in our country, in the world right now. The question that we have to ask when Jesus asks this is, if you could gain all the things of the world, more than Jeff Bezos, I mean, that guy can do whatever he wants. He can buy anything he wants. He's living like he's God. Would it be worth it? That's the question. How much can you gain? Imagine if you could gain all the wealth of Jeff Bezos and all the wealth of the whole world. What would it be worth if you could get all of that and have it? I mean, imagine the things you could buy. Imagine the places you could go, the food you could eat, the entertainment you could enjoy. What would it be worth if you could have it all and yet lose your soul? Do you understand the question? Look, the point is in the question. He's saying, if you could get it all, would it be worth it? And the answer is obvious, because the stuff of this world lasts for, 70, 80, 90 years. You will last forever. And if you get all the things of this world and you lose your soul, you have suffered loss. You come out on the wrong side of that balance sheet. It's your soul. It's worth more than all the world. It's worth more than all that you can have in this world. And friends, since you and I probably won't get all that much by comparison with what is in this world, why would you lose your soul for that? And we need to let this sink in. You are able to lose your soul. Do you see that here? You are able to lose your soul. Just live for yourself. Just live for self. What you will receive when Christ returns is this: darkness, weeping and gnashing of teeth, eternal ruin that the Bible calls hell. Now, does your Christianity cost you anything? Friends, we are told that we have to let go of anything that keeps us from following Christ. And no loss is too great to have him. So he moves to this third reason. Verse 37. For what can a man give in return for his soul? Now this is another pointed question. What can a man give in exchange for his soul? What could you trade for your soul? In history, many, many times, evil men have kidnapped others. And what they do is they kidnap them, they take them. It still happens today. In fact, we saw a news story about this just the other day, just last night, a little girl that was found after she was kidnapped. People, evil people have kidnapped and then held for ransom their victims. Let me ask you this, okay? If you were kidnapped, if you were taken, who would ransom you? And how much would they pay? The The Bible says that if you are without Christ, you are in fact already captured. You are a slave. It says in Romans 6:20 that you are a slave in sin. You're captured. You have to be bought back. And the Bible also says that you cannot buy back your lost soul. You can't ransom yourself. That's the condition in which you find yourself outside of Christ. You cannot save your lost soul, but there is one who can. Christ alone can save your soul. Jesus gave his life as a ransom, a payment. He gave his life in exchange when he died on his cross. He died on a cross to give his life to buy you back so that you could be free from captivity. Again, I say, you are able to lose your soul, but Christ alone can save your soul now and forever. And so the only reasonable response is this: let go of anything that hinders you. Take up your cross and follow him. He will welcome you. He will give you life now, and you will be held safely for forever. He goes to this fourth reason in verse 38, the final reason. Final reason. Four. Again, he points to a day of judgment. Whoever is ashamed of me and of my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of him will the Son of Man also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. Jesus uses the term for himself here. He uses the term Son of Man. Now, if you want to know what comes to mind for someone at that time, you just have to go to Daniel chapter 7, where there is someone who is described as coming from God to rule all the nations and to judge in amazing glory, okay, from the Ancient of Days. This is Jesus talking to some people. Picture him. In his earthly ministry, he is a humble-looking Galilean carpenter that started teaching a few years ago. Humble-looking guy. And he says, he calls himself the Son of Man. Now you're forced to think, could this be the great one who will judge, who will rule over all, who comes from God himself? Jesus says this: I am that guy. And he says this: if you are ashamed of me now, he says, whoever is ashamed of me and my words now, in this adulterous and sinful generation, of that person will, on that day, the Son of Man be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father and his holy angels. What does that word mean, ashamed? It means unwilling to acknowledge. Okay, that's the basic idea here. Saying that you're a Christian can cause people to look at you and say you're an idiot, or you're a fool, or maybe you're a fanatic, or maybe you've just been brainwashed. And sometimes it's not convenient to say that you're a Christian. Jesus says, I need you to acknowledge me, and don't shy away from it. Because whoever is ashamed of me and my words now, when I come again, like Tom said in Sunday school, that's when Jesus will say to those that wanted to have both the world and call themselves Christian, Jesus will say, I didn't know you. I never knew you. So there's this contrast between what is happening today and the glory that will be revealed. Now, did you ever read C.S. Lewis's book, The Great Divorce? In that book, it's not about what will happen after we die. If you think that way when you approach the book, you just miss the whole point. The point of the book in The Great Divorce is there are all these people, and they're on this this bus, and they go to a heaven, sort of the edge of heaven. And they go from this dark, dreary place where there are sort of pleasures of this world there, but they're sort of drab and they're sort of empty. And they get on this bus to go to heaven. And when they get there, all of these people have different things that would hold them back from actually going into heaven. And the point of the book is this. All the things that we would hold on to for self, rather than let them go and enter into what is so much bigger, so much greater, eternal and real. And the point of the book is, which would you choose? And there are different characters, and some of them wrestle with lust or greed or vanity, wealth, pride. And in different ways, he illustrates all of these things where these people have to wrestle with, can I let that go in order to have what is better? And in some of the scenes, it's a painful wrestling where a person will be faced with this. Some of them turn back and stay in this world, the things of this world. Others go through the pain of letting go. And it's a painful process for them all. It's a wrestling. It's like taking part of themselves in some cases and just losing part of themselves in order to go to God. Well, that's what Jesus is saying here. That's the paradigm. There's two things happening here. Jesus says, you can come with me, and if you want to follow me, there's something that's so much greater, so much better. I will give you life. You'll be my disciple, and you'll have life with me for forever, because there's so much more than this world has to offer. Or you can live for the things that are here and now. You can live for self in this world. That's the line he draws. And he's inviting people to come and to be with him. And here's what we have to say. Following him, taking up a cross, denying yourself is all worth it. You see, what he gives us is life for forever. And friends, I know that most of you know exactly what I'm talking about. Some of you still need to deny yourself, turn to him in repentance, and take up a cross. And he will welcome you. And you'll be a part of his people. But listen, I want you to strengthen your resolve today to do this very basic thing that Jesus calls us to do. Think about the desires that you have that are of this world and be willing to let any of them go. Strengthen your resolve to be willing to suffer in order to be loyal to Christ. It will be worth it. This life is for such a short time, and it will soon be over, and the difficulties will be over. Christ gives us a way out. When we look to the cross of what Jesus did, and we know that there's a Redeemer who has given his life for each one of us who turns to him, it makes sense to take up a cross and follow him, to actually follow him with our lives, because it is so worth it, because it is forever, and there is so much more than this world has to offer. And Jesus says, like our Sunday school lesson says, come and die. And while we go, just like Polycarp was given grace to endure even to his death, you have the promises of God to see you through. You don't have to go through the suffering. You don't have to go even to a cross alone. You'll never have to do what he did for you. He gives us these promises. No temptation for believers. 1 Corinthians 10:13. No temptation has seized you except that which is common to man. And God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear. But when you are, he will also provide a way out so that you can endure it. He gives us lots of promises. I wrote many of them down. I'm not going to read them all. He says, my grace is sufficient for you because my power is made perfect in your weakness. When it is difficult to follow him and to take up your cross, he will give you grace. His grace is enough for you in your weakness, and he'll use you in that time. And Jesus said to us, this is what I want you to do. I want you to go and make disciples. And a reason that he gives us is this. He gives us this comfort and this promise. And behold, I will be with you even to the very end of the age. Strengthen your resolve today. Deny yourself, take up your cross, and follow him. Embrace the cross, follow Jesus. Let's